नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। भगवते वासुदेवाय। This, which verse is this that we have on the board? 15? Is that 15? 19. Chapter 18. Chapter 18, that's clear. But which one begins with Shuka Uvacha? That's 9. It's not 9. It's 22, someone says. Okay, now I'm with you. Okay, sorry for that. So we'll begin by reciting together verse 22. This is chapter 18, sorry. Diti vows to kill King Indra. Please repeat. Sri Sutu Vacha. Tad Vishnu Ratasya Sabad Arayanir. Vacho Nishamya Dritam Alpam Artavat. Sabha Jayan San Nibritena Chaitasa. Gada Shatra Yana Sarva Darshana. Shri Sutu Vacha. Tad Vishnu Ratasya Sabada Ryanir. Vacho Nishamya Dritamalpa Martavat. Sabha Jayan San Nibritena Chaitasa. Jagada Shatra Yana Sarva Darshana. Next. Vaishnavis.
Shruta Vacha.
Tad Vishnu Ratasya Sabhanayanir. Shri Suta Vacha. Shri Suta Goswami said, Tat, those, Vishnu Ratasya, of Maharaj Parikshit, Sa, he, Badarayani, Shukadev Goswami, Vacha, words, Nishamya, hearing, Adritam, respectful, Alpam, brief, Artavat, meaningful, Sabhajayan San, praising, Nibritena Chaitasa, with great pleasure, Jagada, replied. Satrayana, O Shaunaka, Sarvadarshana, who is aware of everything. Okay, translation and purport by Srila Prabhupada. So now we're reverting to Naimasharanya and Suta Goswami's conversation with the sages there headed by Shaunaka. Shri Suta Goswami said, O great sage Shaunaka, after hearing Maharaj Parikshit speak respectfully and briefly on topics essential to hear, Shukadev Goswami, who was well aware of everything, praised his endeavor with great pleasure and replied. Purport. Maharaj Parikshit's question was very much appreciated by Shukadev Goswami because although it was composed of a small number of words, it contained meaningful inquiries about how the sons of Diti, although born as demons, became demigods. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur stresses that even though Diti was very envious, her heart was purified because of a devotional attitude. Another significant topic is that although Kasyapa Muni was a learned scholar and was advanced in spiritual consciousness, he nonetheless fell a victim to the inducement of his beautiful wife. All these questions were posed in a small number of words, and therefore Shukadev Goswami very much appreciated Maharaj Parikshit's inquiry. So this is the final verse that I was supposed to give today. And we have to go back to text number 9, where Pancharatna Prabhu left off the day before yesterday. Yesterday, of course, was Sachinandan Swami gave a verse from the 5th canto. So the subject of this verse was the question of Maharaj Parikshit. And that was about how these sons of Diti were transformed into demigods. They were, that'll be explained here about Indra's intervention here, and then Diti and Indra's ultimate reconciliation. That is coming. And also another important thing which Prabhupada mentioned here would be the how Diti and Kasyapa's interaction there and Kasyapa's inducement, as Prabhupada calls it. That is coming. That's not our subject today, but that will be the next topic. So let me go back to text number 9, where we'll be reading now from text 9 to 22, where we finished here. So the text number 9 is like this. The translation is, later in the 8th canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, I shall describe. Now this is Shukadeva Goswami is speaking here. Later in the 8th canto, I shall describe how Urukrama, Lord Vamanadeva, appeared as the son of the great sage Kasyapa, and how he covered the three worlds with three steps. I shall describe the uncommon activities he performed, his qualities, his power, and how he took birth from the womb of Aditi. We may recall now, those who were here, when Pancharatna Prabhu began this chapter, that there was a lot of detailed information here about the genealogy here of the Bhagavatam. And Pancharatna Prabhu explained how we are being placed here as belonging to an ancestry, which is the Bhagavatams. So this information is quite detailed. There's a lot of names here. He joked that, well, if you want to find a name for initiation, here's the good place. But seriously speaking, the genealogy has a very important function, which let's take it step by step. This verse here is explaining about a son of Kasyapa and Aditi, namely Urukrama or Vamanadeva. And we all know from the 8th canto the wonderful story. I think it comprises about 6 chapters there of the 8th canto, with the wonderful dealings with Bali Maharaj and how Vamana could say in like a pin and out like a plow was his tactic there. The dwarf who stepped over the entire universe and didn't have a place for his third step, and then arrested Bali, and quite a subject matter here. One personal reflection on this is that during Kartik, I was going around Vrajmandala, and there were many, many beggars. And I was reflecting on an instruction here that Shukracharya was giving to Bali Maharaj about skipping his promise to give charity to Vamana, which Bali neglected. But Prabhupada actually agreed with Shukracharya in the sense that he said that charity to the poor has no spiritual value often. But Prabhupada recommended that charity be given for the Krishna consciousness movement, because the Krishna consciousness movement takes care of people who are poor, both in poverty in the material sense, but also in the sense of knowledge. That's most everybody, no matter how much money you have in the bank today. So charity should be given for Krishna consciousness. We as devotees, we can have that conviction there, a personal reflection here in this regard. Okay, so now we have quite a few verses to go on, and time is going, so let's carry on here. Now the next verse is like this. Shukadeva continues, now let me describe the sons of Diti. Okay, that was Aditi, right? You know, the Adityas, the demigods. Now this is Diti, you know, the Daityas. Now let me describe the sons of Diti, who were begotten by Kasyapa, same father, but who became demons. In this demoniac family, the great devotee Prahlad Maharaj appeared, and Bali Maharaj also appeared in that family. The demons are technically known as Daityas because they proceeded from the womb of Diti. Note that there are devotees born in demoniac families, and that demons can become devotees and also vice versa. Watch out. So here we have Prahlad Maharaj, his grandson Bali, and yes, that's a very interesting part of our genealogy. Carrying on, text 11. First, the two sons named Hiranyakashipu and Hiranyaksha took birth from Diti's womb. Both of them were very powerful and were worshipped by the Daityas and Danavas. Hiranyakashipu, we know from the seventh canto, right? And the Lord Nisringadev and the whole pastime there. Hiranyaksha, we know from canto number three, and Varahadev, right? Remember? Okay, next text. The wife of Hiranyakashipu was known as Kayadu. She was the daughter of Jamba and the descendant of Danu. She gave birth to four consecutive sons known as Samlada, Anulada, Lada, and Pralada. The sister of these four sons was known as Simhika. She married the demon named Viprachit and gave birth to another demon named Rahu. Right? That rings a bell, doesn't it? Now, next 14. While Rahu in disguise was drinking nectar among the demigods, the Supreme Personality of Godhead severed his head. The wife of Samlada was named Kriti. By union with Samlada, Kriti gave birth to a son named Panchajana. Okay, now Rahu and drinking nectar, this is the eighth canto, right? And Mohini Murti, and she tricked the demigods, or the demons, by bewildering them by her beauty. And then they acquiesced to her giving the entire nectar to the demigods. But this Rahu, he snuck over in disguise, and some of the nectar passed his lips, which caused his head to be immortal, but the Sudarshan Chakra took away the rest of his body. So he, now this is his planetary influence here, which causes eclipses, I think. That will. Okay, text number 15. The wife of Lada was named Damini. She gave birth to two sons named Vitapa and Ilvala. When Agastya Muni became Ilvala's guest, Ilvala served him a feast by cooking Vatapi, who was in the shape of a ram. This is a really grotesque cannibal feast, which is described in the Ramayana, how these two demons were disguising, one was disguising as Brahmana, and he would feed his brother to sages, and then he would call for his brother to come out from the sage's stomach and kill the rishi. But they tried this on Agastya, but Agastya managed to digest the brother. And when the other brother found out that that happened, he started to attack Agastya, but Agastya burned him to ashes with a glance. So that finished off those. Okay, now, text 16. The wife of Anulada was named Surya. She gave birth to two sons named Buskala and Mahisha. Prahlad had one son, Virochana. Right, Prahlad, Virochana, Bali, whose wife gave birth to Bali Maharaj. Text 17. Thereafter, Bali Maharaj begot 100 sons in the womb of Asana. Of these 100 sons, King Bana was the eldest. The activities of Bali Maharaj, which are very laudable, will be described later in the eighth canto. So we know King Bana from the Krishna book. He was favored by Lord Shiva. That'll be explained here in the next verse. Text number 18. Since King Bana was a great worshiper of Lord Shiva, he became one of Lord Shiva's most celebrated associates. Even now, Lord Shiva protects King Bana's capital and always stands beside him. You know, Bana had 1,000 arms, and he was playing his drum, and Lord Shiva was dancing his, what's it called, Tundra and Nritya. So he pleased Lord Shiva, and then, he angered Lord Shiva by saying, I have these 1,000 arms, but nobody is giving me a challenge, so, you know, it's useless, this benediction. So Shiva said, you'll meet your next opponent. So then he, there was a whole thing with Usha, his daughter, and Aniruddha, and then Krishna came to save his grandson, and there was a big war, and Banu was ultimately about to be defeated, and then Banu's mother appeared naked before Krishna, who turned his face away. Kind of reminiscent of Bhishma's having to turn away from, was it Shikhandi there, and like that. So, yes, this we know about. Right, so that's text 19. Now next is, this is 19 now. The 49 Marut demigods were also born from the womb of Diti. None of them had sons. Although they were born of Diti, King Indra gave them a position as demigods. Purport. Apparently, even demons can be elevated to the position of as demigods when their atheistic character is reformed. There are two kinds of men throughout the universe. Those who are devotees of Lord Vishnu are called demigods, and those who are just the opposite are called demons. Even the demons can be transformed into demigods, as the statement of this verse proves. Okay, it's interesting. You know, our genealogy here, it's the demons and the demigods were coming from the same background here. So the demigods can, the demons can become demigods. And this happened because Diti, following the advice of Kashyapa, performed a Vaishnav Vrata, and then this protected her embryo even when Indra tried to kill it. And then Indra became very remorseful, and it turned out because of this devotional service of Diti, although there was enmity and enviousness, it turned out to be very positive. So there's a great potency here to be learned here of our devotional service. We shouldn't doubt that there will be some tremendous benefit of whatever service we may do. Svalpam api asya dharmasya, don't doubt it. Even offering obeisances or whatever we do regularly, there is a tremendous potency here. Please let us take this lesson. Now, text 20, Sri Raju Vacha. Now we're going over, King Parikshit inquired. Here's the question. My dear Lord, due to their birth, the 49 Maruts must have been obsessed with a demoniac mentality. Why did Indra, the king of heaven, convert them into demigods? Did they perform any rituals or pious activities? And 21, now this is the last verse before we're caught up now to where we're supposed to be. My dear Brahmana, I and all the sages present here are eager to know about this. Therefore, O great soul, kindly explain to us the reason. So the answer to this question will be dealt with in the coming section. I would just like to now, we're running out of time here, but I would just like to wrap up here by mentioning that there's a genealogical chart here in the back of this book, starting with Krishna and then his expansions to Brahma and going down to, Uttanapada, Svayambhuva Manu, his son Uttanapada, and Priyavrata must be here also. I don't see him, but, and also later we have Anga and Vena, and then Nishada, and Preetu, and Archie, And we know Dakshina and Asikni and the 60 daughters of Daksha, which, you know, the Origin of Species talks about transmutation. So here we have the daughters of Daksha giving birth to locusts and single-hooved animals and creepers and cows and buffaloes. And so this is our genealogy. And I would just like to mention here that, you know, it says we should know Krishna Tattvataha, right? In truth. So, you know, you could doubt and be it's a little remarkable, you know, we're spending this quality time with this genealogy. Why not go to the Rasalila Panchadhyaya? Because time is short, you know? But no, the Bhagavatam is preparing us for something big, beyond our imagination. So, Tattvataha means that we love Krishna, and that means we love everything in relationship with Krishna, right? You know, we like Krishna's yellow dhoti also, and all his, you know, devotees, and we also like all the parts of the Bhagavatam, and we should, just like it said that we should be, what's the word that Prabhupada uses? We should be captivated by this information of going back to Godhead. Well, we should be fascinated by this genealogy. Although it may seem detailed and, you know, a lot of names and, you know, but just think of it. Now, this is the oldest living culture in the world. It survived, you know, judging by the Temple of Vedic Planetarium and the book scores in India, it's doing well in India today. It survived the colonization from Britain. It survived the Muslims for 1,000 years with the Mughals and all their invasion. It survived the Shankaracharya and the Buddhists. It goes way before Christ. So this is interesting. And another thing is that, you know, there's 1 billion people here in, you know, from the 4 extremities of the subcontinent, from, you know, Puri to Rameshwar to Dwarka to Badrinath, who are wandering around countless pilgrimage places with this genealogy as our cultural or ancestral collective understanding. And now, by the spreading of the Krishna consciousness movement, there are people in Scandinavia and New Zealand and California who also adhere to this genealogy. This is fascinating, isn't it? Just from a religious studies point of view. Huh? Now, I'm running out of time here because I want to leave questions, and we're definitely going to be finished by 8:45. So, and I hope there are some questions and comments. But now, there was one last thing that I had intended to incorporate here now. And yeah, you know, we heard from Atul Krishna that, there's stern recommendations that the Bhagavatam is meant for not for anyone's livelihood. It's actually meant for a spiritual purpose, right? To develop, Bhagavati Bhakti, to develop love of Godhead for the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Nityam Bhagavata Sevaya. We know this. Now, what I would like to try to present here is that this does not preclude that the Bhagavatam has an immanent function. Now, I'm thinking of the preface to the Bhagavatam, where Prabhupada says that there is a need for humanity to be one in peace, in friendship, and in prosperity with a common cause. And the Bhagavatam will fill this function. So I mean to appreciate now the Bhagavatam on a, you know, on an imminent level here. I think that the Bhagavatam fills a very important function for us devotees in our community here. Having a regular Bhagavatam class, now this is the English one, the Bengali's going on. I think there's one in the international group. I think in the academy there's one. I think Satchinandan Swami has another one. And then there's the internet, and then there's the radio, and so on. So, you know, it's a broad program. There's a lot of devotees involved in this collective. Together we're attending to the Bhagavatam. And you are listening submissively. I think this is empathic. You're expressing a interest in the community's needs, in the community's goals, in the community's concerns. And I think this is a bond, which is very, very important for us, especially here at the world headquarters, where you know, the energy of Lord Gauranga's Sankirtan movement will, you know, be evident. And so I would just like to appreciate here that the Bhagavatam, as a speaker now here, I was asked to give the class here, Ananda Tirtha Prabhu and the other devotee, I forget his name, but they kindly asked me to give this. So, you know, I was accepting an assignment here, which is to speak from the point of view of Vyasadeva, right? Here I am, you know, Joe Schmo from West Philadelphia, you know. So I'm going to do this. But yeah, together let us have this goal that we will try to live up to this highest standard and behave in such a way that we can aim to fill this, have this as our goal, that we will have the Bhagavatam recitation as to be, when properly heard and chanted, it is in itself pious. And that will have immediate effects upon us. Finally, I would just like to say that the way, it's not that one should try to screw out some extraneous purpose in order to demonstrate that one is superior to the previous acharyas. But rather, the hermeneutics of presenting the Bhagavatam is explained by Prabhupada that we should try to be interested and we should try to be understandable in our presentation so that the devotees will find, the audience will find it, you know, captivating. Now, finally, my last point now, I would just like to mean to say that the requirement for this is that one will be pure in mind. That's Prabhupada's point there. And to be pure in mind, we have to be pure in our basic bodily functions, eating, sleeping, mating, and defending. So let us aim to try and keep the Bhagavatam on a very nice level like that, okay? And I thank you very much for allowing me this opportunity to try to improve my understanding of the Bhagavatam by explaining what I can as far as I'm able. Thank you very much. Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai. Grantaraj Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai. ISKCON, BBT, Founder of Charges, Divine Grace, Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. Sri Mayapur Dham Ki Jai. Nitai Gaur Premanandi. Comments? Pankajangri Prabhu, Janinivas, Learned Devotees, Mother Lakshmi Muni, any? Devaki? Yes, Mataji, please.
Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna.
You referred a few times to our genealogy, talking about this, all these personalities.
Yeah.
I thought it was a nice concept of our genealogy, that you know, somehow we're all related to this family, that, you know, we're all descending from these personalities from the Bhagavatam. So I had a thought that is our connection to this genealogy through disciplic succession, or is it also through some distant bloodline connection, or how is it?
Good question. Well, here in the genealogical chart, it certainly begins with Krishna and goes to Brahma, and that is, our spiritual line, as we know from Prabhupada's presentation of the parampara and the Bhagavad Gita there. But then we do go into the material line, and we have our he begot this daughter, and that daughter begot so many sons, and like that. So this is the material genealogy is also here. But I think that this is important, and that we should not consider it. We should consider it as our cultural heritage, and like I said, be fascinated by the unifying effect that this has for peace, for friendship and prosperity with a common goal that the Bhagavatam is filling. Is that all right? Sir.
You mentioned, Prabhu, that Diti, she was performing some Vaishnava practice.
Diti was